during the session. It's very appropriate, otherwise language can go.
Phil, did you ever do any more work with that puzzle thing?
Yeah, I think you did that.
Did you?
There's only one mistake, theological mistake.
Yeah, I got it there. I've only had a chance to read for that.
Without hands or Peter's soul, it doesn't have a soul.
Hmm. So, okay. Have you seen this?
No.
You don't know where he came up from. He came up from someplace, just in the door.
Some guy at work.
It seems like, in the back of my mind, I've heard of this before, but it's a puzzle. This puzzle was written by a lady in California in response to an offer from a gentleman in Philadelphia that he would pay anyone $1,000 who could write a puzzle he could not solve. He failed to do so and paid $1,000. The answer is one word. It appears only four times in the Bible. So this is what it says. I've never really tried to work on it. Phil said he got an answer to it. But this is what the puzzle says. It says, Adam got made out of dust, but thought it was best to make me first. So I was made before man to answer God's most holy plan. A living being I became, and Adam gave to me my name. I from his presence then withdrew, and more of Adam never knew. I did my maker's law obey, nor ever went from it astray. Thousands of miles I go in fear, but seldom on earth appear. For a purpose wise which God did see, he put a living soul in me. A soul from me God did claim, and took from me the soul again. So when from me the soul had fled, I was the same as when first made, without hands or feet. I travel on from pole to pole. I labor hard by day, by night. To fallen man I give great light. Thousands of people, young and old, will by my death great light behold. No right or wrong can I conceive. The scripture I cannot believe. Although my name therein is found, they are to me an empty sound. No fear of death doth trouble me. Real happiness I'll never see. To heaven I shall never go, or to hell below. Now when these lines you slowly read, go search your Bible with all speed. For that my name is written there, I do honestly to you declare. Okay. So I don't know if there's, the filter's got the answer for it. Maybe somebody can work on it.
Have a son, a great light. When it dies, a great light, and over.
Supernova. Maybe. The word appears only four times in the Bible. So. Yeah. If anybody wants to look at this, a copy or something, it's fine with me. I don't know if I'll have time to dig into it or not. We'll give it to the grad students for the final exam.
Yeah.
So if anybody's curious, you can see me about that or see Phil. Okay, lesson 24. Mm-hmm. We're still discussing this narrative sequence. And we were talking about the imperfect plus perfect sequence yesterday. We've already seen the perfect plus imperfect, now the first imperfect plus perfect. And I'll just start there at part B again, just to pick up where we left off and get a little bit of overlap here. The imperfect plus perfect sequence is used with all the meanings of the imperfect, whether future or habitual durative. The conjunction before the perfect is normal and pointed according to the regular rules given in section 46. So that's important. You might underline that statement or whatever, because you don't want to forget that in the imperfect perfect series, the while conjunction is the normal form. So examples here, yimsa oto with nathan lo epakesa. He will find him and give him the money. So the give is being translated in an imperfect sense because of the sense that started out. And yisrafu epa'ir will lakadu epa'am. They're the same thing. Starting out with an imperfect future sense of it and applying that also to the perfect form. And the form of the wow is just the normal wood plus the schwa. If the first imperfect is used in the habitual sense, it is carried through the sequence. So here's an example where Yikra el Hanavi wa Amar. He used to call to the prophet and say. So he used to call. It's an imperfect form, but it's got this habitual durative sense to it, and that's carrying through in the perfect form that follows in the sequence. Now that's about where we left off. Note that when a negative clause is inserted in the sequence, the verb is no longer first. You see, the continuation of these sequences is dependent upon the position of the verb being first in the sentence, in the clause or in the sentence. And when something happens to prevent the verb from being first, you break up your series. And then you have to resume the series if you want to. And the negative, and there's other four ways that happens too, but we'll get to those later. But the negative is one way that will happen. You see, in order to make a negative, you have to put the low in front. So you see it's negative. And if you do that, now the verb's no longer first. So what happens is you go back to the normal unconverted form for that verb. And then if you want to, you can see, well, let's look at the example here. It says, they went and called to him, but he did not hear. Halaku, so we're starting out with a perfect form. Wa yikra'u elau willo shama. Okay? You're starting out with a perfect, then you go to a converted imperfect. Wa yikra'u, so you're starting a series with a perfect, then you go to a converted perfect, but then your next verb is a negation. And so on the negation, you go back to the normal form of the verb. You go back to the perfect again. Now, if you wanted to follow the sequence, the next verb in the sequence could go back to a converted imperfect again, and you could start a new sequence in effect with this perfect form. So that's basically what happens. And the reason is that the low is breaking up the sequence. It's coming first in the clause. You see, will low. The will is now on low. It's not on the verb form. And so you've broken up the structure. It's not a gigantic problem because you can resume it with the next verb if you want. So after such an interruption, the original sequence may be resumed by reverting to the converted form. This and other complications will be dealt with below. By below, he means the rest of the book. We'll be dealing with the complications as we go. All right. So any questions about that? For right now, all we need to worry about is the negation. What a negation. Now, this would apply to a series that started with a perfect, started with an imperfect, and then went to a perfect also. If you're going along with perfects that have been converted in meaning, in effect, from the imperfect that started, and you get a negation there, it'll go back to an imperfect, and then you can start another series of perfects again. So it'll go both ways. Okay. Very curious grammatical device, and like you said, I don't know of any other language that does anything like this quite the same way. I mean, there's some similarity, but not quite the rigid form that we see in Hebrew. And from what he said, apparently other Semitic languages don't do that either. I would guess that if any other languages did it, it'd be Semitic languages. But
well, it has to be peculiar. It's the only rigid thing that there is in the whole language.
Yeah, but we haven't gotten to the exceptions yet. No, it's pretty... I don't know if you can call them exceptions, but you will find places where the series is broken and you have to resume them and that type of thing. So that would be about the only thing as far as exceptions. Okay, in the converted perfect, the stress is usually shifted to the final syllable in the first person singular and the second person masculine singular. This is probably not a gigantic point to do much worrying about because unfortunately, this is an accent shift that does not affect the vowel point. So we don't really need to worry about it that much, although you'll see it marked this way. So... remember that kathapti was the normal form, but when you convert it, it's wukathapti. So normally kathapti is your normal stress of the perfect, and the stress is shifting to the last syllable in the converted form, wukathapti, and kathapta becomes wukathapta. Now this doesn't happen all the time though, and notice statement at the top of the next page. Pointing or vocalization is unaffected by the shift in stress. That's fortunate for us. That if it were, if you had to change the vowel points, well, you certainly have to pay attention to it more carefully. It says, which does not take place in all instances, especially the corresponding forms of the verb 3-aleph and 3-hey. So 3-aleph and 3-hey verbs won't do this, and sometimes other verbs won't do it either. So it's just a matter of noting when you're dealing with the text. If you just have to see the accent mark in a funny place, this is the reason. Okay, let's So it's just first person singular and second person masculine, singular plural, second
masculine. He said in the first part that these sequences continue for dozens of kilometers. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Would that be within a sentence or many sentences?
Oh, within many sentences, yeah. Usually they won't have, now if it was probably an epistle that he was writing in Hebrew, then it might be for many, one sentence and many clauses. I mean, he strings things together that way, but in the Hebrew, generally you're going to see, periods and so forth. Although, remember, the original was run all together, so it's made many a matter of decision of the editors and so forth, the way they decided to break it up. But as far as your text is concerned, no, you won't. You'll seldom see maybe more than, three or four at the most, clauses in one sentence, and then but you may see the next sentence pick up, right? In other words, the next sentence may start with wa and so forth, you know. And so in a way you could just say it's all run together, it really is.
And so since most Hebrew sentences turn the verb, like this perfect, imperfect pattern, if I had this wa consecutive
mm-hmm.
story, my next sentence come along, it would just start off with the
converted form.
Right.
You don't have to start over again just because a period was put there, because the sentence stopped. The only thing that would make you start over is if you had a negation. And and it started out, et cetera, something like that. Then your verb is no longer first in the clause. So even with a sentence, and a complete sentence, the next sentence starts with wa, so forth, and in the verb form, then you can just keep going and going and going and going and going. And that could go on indefinitely. Go through a whole book or a whole, a whole chapter, a whole book or whatever, theoretically. Normally, though, there'll be something that'll interfere and break up the series. So that's why you probably won't get more, what do you say, 12 months old or so in a row before something happens to them. Somebody wanted to, do something for vanity's sake, or get the enemy, they could go through and find out what the longest uninterrupted sequence is.
It's probably in the somewhere in the Nazarene.
Well, yeah, they probably somewhere. For the mission of the Talmud or something. Okay, do we have any other questions so far on these narrative sequences? Like I said, there'll be a lot more to come on this, more refinement and so forth, but that's the basic mechanism there. Knowing what you know now, it can solve a gigantic proportion of the problems that you would have in the Hebrew text. It's just a lot of refinement now. Okay, and like I said, by far the more common is starting with a perfect and then with the imperfect series, because a good percentage of the Old Testament is historical narrative where you're talking about events that took place in the past. In the poetic books and so forth, you're not likely to see as much of it. And things like Psalms or Proverbs or something, you're not really going through sequences, and thoughts are, changing, and patterns are changing, that kind of thing. So you're likely just to see the normal forms of the verbs there without a lot of long consecutive forms. But if the psalm, for example, is relating a song about the song of Moses or something like this, or the song of some victory or something like that, then you're likely more likely to see a series started. Okay, the segulets. They've been saving this one up for you. We've already run into peculiarities of segulets. Now he's actually using the term. I think he just called it penultimate stress before. The nouns with penultimate stress, like melech, are collectively called segulets because of the presence of the vowels to gol in one or both syllables. So if one or both syllables has to gol, it's called a segulet technically. I guess na'ar would probably, by this definition, not be included as a segulet, even though it's penultimate stress, although its patterns are very similar. And other books would probably include that in the whole group too. But here we're breaking down into four categories of nouns that have, number one, penultimate stress, and number two, that's the goal in one of the two syllables. And there's four kinds of those, and they do different things. Remember, we've already run into the problem that in the plurals, these all had a nice regular pattern, shawa kamas, when the plural was formed. But then when you got into the suffix forms, and you needed a closed syllable in the first syllable, and you're wondering what short vowel you go with there, you might have expected the rule of Shawa to give you a hirik all the time, but we found out that that's not the case. In fact, more often than not, it's Pathak. So we've already run into this basic problem. Now he just wants to put all of these verbs together with that problem and show you what happens to them And of course, when you add get the plural forms of the suffixes, when you get the heavy suffixes or that two-syllable ahem suffix, ahen, ahem, so forth, that also reduces that first part as much as it can go, and you get that same problem coming up. So this little chart is real handy because it tells you what happens to each one of these types. And then, of course, that information can be gleaned from that appendix in the back of the book, too, if you're looking at it now and you haven't seen before. So let's look at these. These nouns revert to an original one-syllable stem in the singular when the suffix is at. So, for example, Malki, my king. So we've already somewhat come into contact with that. But there was a note on that thing that's the details that will be covered later. Well, here's the later where it's covered. All right, the vowel of the suffix will form in this instance is pasak. It is the characteristic vowel of the word and also occurs in the construct plural. Four main types of cigalate nouns are represented by as follows here. Well, melek is the first type we've already looked at. The absolute form is melek. The construct form is also melek. No change in the construct, singular. With the suffix, you get this malki. And this pasak, there's no way to predict it. It's just what this particular one does. And some of them do other things, as you'll see. It'll either be a pasak or a hirik or a kamasatuf in that first position, depending on what kind of noun it is. Okay, and then, of course, with the suffix of malki, malkika, etc., and pretty much the close short syllable was is going to stay the same through the whole paradigm, malkikam. So it doesn't really change. Now, plural absolute is melachim. The plurals on these segulates, well, all of them except for that last category with cholim, they all have shawa kamas as their pattern. That last one we really haven't seen too much of yet, so we're going to get to see it now. I think they had shoresh or something. We saw that before, some kind of connection, but it was just an example or something. Now, in the construct, though, it becomes malke, because again, in the construct, you have a similar type of situation. What you have is an unstressed comas there on that plural form. Remember, you take the eem off and you put seriod on, and then you try to do some more shortening if you can. And that unstressed comas would have gone to shawa, which would have resulted in rule of shawa, and you would have expected hirik in that first syllable, and you would have expected milke. But it isn't milke, it's malke. So that's the peculiarity again. We get this pasak for a thematic vowel here on this particular form. So note we've made of that before. And then in the plural with the suffixes, the same basic thing happens when you have... see, first of all, there's no problem if you, we're just adding a suffix on per se because there's no further shortening necessary than what was already done for the plural. For the plural, you had to add a syllable, im. And with the plural, with suffix, which is a syllable, usually one syllable, pasakios, or if it's two syllables, most of them have the penultimate stress on that suffix, so you're effectively only adding one syllable as far as the word is concerned. But when you add those second and third person plural forms, where you had ahem and ahen and ahem and ahen, you had two syllables, the last one had the stress, so you've got another shortening on that first syllable, and guess what? The shortening comes out just the way it did before on these other forms. It gets pasak again in that syllable. So, in other words, basically, whenever that thing is getting doubly shortened, you might say, to term it that way, it's going to go to pasak for nouns like melech. So the two-sigol pattern goes to pasak. Okay, then part B, kever. That's also a two-sigol pattern, but this one is a little bit different. The construct, kever, the same, but with the suffix, it's kivri and kivrika, etc. We get hirik here, and kivrika. And the plural absolute is the normal form, shawa, kamas, kivarim, but in the construct plural, it becomes kivre. With hirik, that a pasak like melek did. And in the plural with the suffix, it's kibarai, that's no problem, but it's kibrekem, under the same analogy here. Now, the question is, how do you know if you look at a sigalit that's got two sigols in it, whether it's the first type A or the second type B? You don't. You have to know the verb. I mean, know the word, know the noun. But if you had to guess, you'd probably be better to guess with the first type because they're more common. But you don't want to really have to guess. You just need to know it. So that's why this. They'll either give you the construct with suffix or one of those forms in the dictionary, you know, with this to let you know what happens to it. So the singular form of suffix is probably the simplest thing to do this with. Okay, then part C, safer, that's got a seri in the first position and sigil in the second position. And so the nouns in that position, the construct doesn't change, still safer. And you might have expected the sigil to shorten. I mean, the seri is shortened, but it is a stressed seri. So that's the reason. It's unstressed, unstressed seri that was shortened. This is stressed, so that's the reason it doesn't shorten up. But then with the suffixes, you get these also become hirik. So it's sifri and sifrika and sifrikem. And in the plural absolute, same thing as the three, the two above, it's shawa pata. So shawa kamat, sifarim. But in the absolute, in the plural construct, it's sifre. It's a hirik again. And the plural with suffix sifarai, but the heavy suffixes get sifrei hem. So it behaves just like category B behaves. Now I think the most unusual one is category D, kodesh. Kodesh is segalit, and it's because it's got the segol in the second syllable, but it's got colon in the first. The construct is still the same, you're not going to be able to shorten that colon. However, with the suffixes, that colon does shorten down to kamas chatu. So that's something we really haven't seen before, nor would you necessarily expect it for the colon to even get shortened, but it does shorten down to kamas chatu. So it's kol shi, and kol shika, and kol shichem. And the plural absolute, that's another one that's unusual. The normal pattern was shawa kamas. This one gets kamas chatu kamas. So that's just plain unusual. I don't know what else to say about it. See, it's not because it's a guttural. See, kof there is not a guttural. So it's not taking an alternate form of shawa for a guttural. It's just taking, the reduced kamas there, period. Now you know it's kamas katu because there isn't any katas kamas, normal kamas. Katas kamas would be in kamas katu now. So that would be kodashim. And the construct plural is kodshe, just like the singular stuff with the suffix. And the plural with suffix is kodashai. That's just like the plural was. So whatever that unusual, that peculiarity, the plural carries over with the suffixes. And then with the heavy suffix, with the two-syllable suffix, you might want to call it, it gets the two-syllable with the stress on the last one. It gets kamas chatu, full kamas chatu again. So, kol shekem. All right. So that'll at least explain those types. You'll probably find yourself looking back at this chart and trying to remember exactly what it does.
This last one, how prevalent is this last one?
This last type.
The rest of the.
Oh, they're more rare. They're definitely more rare. There aren't very many of them, but there are. We had Shoresh, Kodesh. I don't know if they Boker, right? Was another one. Hoshek.
Otzarayim.
Oh yes, that could be considered one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be too rare.
Well, it's not rare in the sense of maybe only once or twice. There's a significant number of nouns, so if you compare them to the other segments, they would be small. You probably have the major ones listed wherever they list the first in this category in the back.
Page
290. Okay, they listed under Kodesh. So, yeah, you have Kodesh, you have Okel, Kent, Ozen, Ear, Okel, meaning food, Boker, Gorek, Goren, Koshek, Kodesh, month. So in that Oznaim for noon, we've got Moknaim for loin, But those only occur in dual forms. Shoresh, root, we had that, and orek, or orek meaning neck. So those are no doubt the most common ones. And again, I'm sure there's others too, but those are the common ones. So there's not a lot of them, but there's enough of them. Okay. Any other questions there? Let's look at this last note. It says, nouns with seri have characteristic hearing. Those in kolam have kamastatu. But those with segol may have either papak or hearing, which must accordingly be learned for each noun. So in other words, those in category C and D, once you see it, you know how to form the forms. But category A and B are the two categories. It could either be papak or hearing, and you have to know from this. So if you see a noun like Sefer, for example, or Kodesh, you list it in the vocab, they won't need to give you anything, any more information, because you know what it has to be. So they won't probably put the construct form, I mean the singular form of suffix or something to show you. But something like Melech or Keter, they will, to try to let you know. Of the nouns of this type which have occurred thus far, all have a characteristic papak. So all the ones we've had thus far have the papak, except for now. There's only two really. We have had Kever and Tzedek, and all the rest of them are Papak. So for now, you can just rest in that knowledge. But if new ones come in, then you have to learn it with them. So Kever and Tzedek are the only ones that go with hearing of that category. The rest of them are all going with Papak. And the ones we've had, Eretz, Derek, Kesef, Yeleth, Karim, Melech, Evan, and Selah. Those are all Papak types. So that may remove at least some of the mystery associated with the Segulot. Okay, any questions there? Last section deals with prepositions. A few more remarks on prepositions. And it kind of says in plain terms something we've been suspecting all along, that they will take nouns and stick another preposition on them and make another preposition out of them. And sometimes combine other prepositions. So, the noun panim, meaning face, even though it's plural in form, it's not found only in the plural with singular meaning. So there you might call it a, not plural of majesty so much, but it is a plural of extent, some term and so forth. It's, in other words, it's got a different, it's another testimony that Hebrew uses plural a little bit more differently than English does. Okay, it forms a part of several important prepositions, and we've already seen some of these. Lifnei, meaning in the presence of, or before, we had before. Literally, it's to the face of, or to the face of. To the face of. And notice that it's, that serio is a construct plural ending. If you take panim and you want to make the construct plural, it would be panay. And if you put a l in the front of it, you get the rule of shawa, and you get lifnei. So it's just a very logical development from the word panim. Mipnei, same thing. Mipnei, from the presence of, or from before, or because of. And milipnei, another form of that. Milipnei or mipnei. One does a lot, one doesn't at all. And alpnei is upon the surface of, or up against. So upon the face of, see, face has got the, it's taking a broader sense of surface. You know, the face, like we talk about the face of the table or something, you see. It's the surface of the table. And so all panay would be upon the surface of. Okay, or perhaps up against, if you're thinking of a vertical object, it's the face. You're up against it, you see, you're up against the face of it. So it's very logical. Okay, now, when suffixes are added, the noun behaves normally. Compare the plural banim with suffixes. In other words, if you wanted to say before me, for example, there would be lifanau, or excuse me, lifanai. In other words, you're using the plural form of the suffix, just like if you were taking the word panim and putting a pronominal suffix on it. Just the same regular rule. Then you just take the preposition lalam in front of it, and you've got it. Now it's before me, literally to my face. And lifaneka, before you, lifanehu, lifanenu, excuse me, before us, Lifanehem, or Lifanehem before you. So it's just putting the same old suffixes on. So there doesn't need to be a separating this out as a separate paradigm, because it's just the same paradigm you had before when you put suffixes on a plural noun. And then you just put prepositions level in front of that, and you have. So it becomes a new preposition with phenomenal suffix in effect. Okay, any questions there? All right, then, many prepositions like the preceding are compounded from a simple preposition plus a noun. So Lifnei was not the only one that does this. Suffixes are attached according to the rule applying to the noun type in question. So here we have some other examples, and they do the same thing. Al devar, for example, because of. Notice devar is the construct form for davar. And it's begging something. Al devar, it's there's some noun that's going to be associated with that. It'll be in the absolute. Matter, something upon the word or matter, and it's got kind of the idea of the ground. See, when you say this is because of this, another way logically to express that is that this is on the basis of this. This is my premise over here that I'm basing this other conclusion on. And so their idea is that this proposition is resting upon this proposition. So it's upon the matter of this. So you get the idea of because of. It's very logical. So all the bar. Now, if you wanted to say because of me, then you just put the pronominal suffix on the var. Now you're going to change the form slightly. It's not going to be the construct form per se anymore. It's going to be the form that you would use with the pronominal suffix. But it would be al divari, al divari, upon my matter, you see, upon my matter, because of me, on my account, something like that would be maybe a good translation. And then besok is in the midst of. That's just the preposition b on a noun, folk. And so you can put pronominal suffixes on that. If you want to say in the midst of it, besoko, if the it is referring to masculine noun. And bekeret, same thing, in the midst of, same translation. And bekirbo. Bekerov is going to be one of those that takes the Uric type. And I probably just noticed it as a preposition we're having here in speaking now. But anyway, you see it's a singular type noun. It's going to take the Hurric type forms, and it's
first word.
Oh, no wonder. I was looking further on down. Okay, Kerev, yeah, it means inward part, min. Okay, and notice they put in the parentheses with suffix kir b. They tell you that because you would not be able to predict it. Okay, good. I don't know why I missed that. I looked at all, just found all the other words except the first one. All right. So it's just a matter of, in effect, this preposition is a preposition plus a noun. And so the nouns will take pronominal suffixes. Then, part C, even the simple prepositions may be compounded with another for greater clarity. So here it's not so much a preposition plus a noun, but it's a preposition plus a preposition. And so they'll get a multiple idea out of the preposition, or you know, more refinement out of a particular preposition. They'll just combine and make one new preposition built from two old ones. And so may all, that's pretty logical. Preposition min plus preposition all. Min means from, and all means upon. So from on or from upon. So it's real straightforward. May 8th, from with, or from at. From with, you see, et meaning with, and preposition min meaning from with, or from at. Then mitachas, from under. Same logic. Tachas means under, and min means from under. So if you want to say he came out from under the table or something, just put mitachas. So we've got a very efficient system here. It's too bad other languages can do that. Could reduce the total number of prepositions you have to learn. Because they're not so... See, with Greek, you've got a totally different preposition for each idea. I mean, the word form is completely different, and so forth. And you seldom see these combinations, except maybe in a... Sometimes you will see more than one preposition combined together in the beginning of another word or something. But Hebrew is very efficient. They don't like to introduce new words that they can help, but they would rather combine a couple old ones they have. Okay, well, vocabulary then. Any other questions on that? Okay, these aren't by any means all of them that do this. We're going to be running it as we go along, and the vocabularies will add new ones and so forth. We've got a couple of them down here, in fact. Al-Gabar that has been introduced here, but we have Lama'an and Ba'abur, same kind of thing. Okay, vocabulary, carib, inward part, amidst, and the carib is the preposition within. Chesed, that's got the suffix, and they give you this one again because it's a normal segulet and you wouldn't know. So it's chasdi, this one's a pasach type, and means kindness or a proper act. Midbar, meaning there's no plural form for it, means wilderness or desert. And I guess they figure one wilderness is enough, but and they have to put it in the plural. But it's land, it could also mean land for grazing, not necessarily uninhabited, but away from larger urban centers. So I think, you know, they're talking about the wilderness of Midian and so forth, where Moses went out and tended the sheep. There were people there, but it wasn't huge cities. There were nomads there. Panim, meaning face, we've already seen. Mar'eh, meaning appearance. Mitzri, meaning Egyptians. And the plural would be Mitzrim. And remember, the name of the nation of Egypt is Mitzrayim, the dual form. And Mitzri, just like Ka'ani that we had before, I think, is either an adjective or a noun. It's the same form. Feminine, Mitzri. Okay, then Mikneh, cattle or property. We've got a lot of general terms for, you know, things like cattle or property. Chamor means donkey, or sheaf, in other words, male donkey. And Aton means donkey or sheaf, feminine form. And the plurals follow suit too. We've got the im for the masculine and the feminine, although they're two different words. Magefa, stroke or plague or affliction, and feminine noun, plural oath. Negev, the southern part of Palestine, you can interpret that today. And Hanegba we had before, so in that chapter we're dealing with direction. Then Akos is meaning sister. And there's no plural absolute form. Of course, it already looks like a plural form, so I think that's why you don't accept the plural form. Maybe you have that apostol or something. But what looks like a plural is really a singular, and it means sister. Kohen means priest. Probably heard the name Kohen for Jews. It comes from the word Kohen, priest. And a lot of people associate them with Levitical families or something, priesthood families. And then the verbs, nagaf, strike or plague or afflict, and I think they have a lot of verbs like that. A lot of verbs for kill, a lot of verbs for strike, and I don't know, there's something about their history, I think, that's involved there. And then some preposition, lama'an is a conjunction, not a preposition, so that, in order that, and you'll use the imperfect. This one will be often used to convey ideas that are similar to what you see the subjunctive being used for in Greek. In other words, remember we talked about a modal meaning for the imperfect? This is one of the places in which it's very appropriate oftentimes. So that he might do this, you see. In order that he might be whatever. And we are translating the might in there, the subjunctive idea. In Hebrew, you would just have lema'an and then the imperfect form. And in English, you would translate that. Although, you could go ahead and translate it in a future so that he will be something like that. But very often, and the feeling of the context will indicate that it's a hypothetical situation. And you have to kind of decide whether there's a definite prediction being made, or whether there is a hypothetical situation being introduced, and that would dictate whether you go modal or not. But this is very common, and we'll get a lot of experience with it later on. Ba'avur means for the sake of or because of, and al-devar, also for the sake of or because of. Distinction between those is kind of hard maybe to establish. That would be something somebody had to do a study on or something to see if there's a slight shade meaning different. I haven't been able to see any real difference between them. So. I mean, I suspect there is a difference, but I really can't pinpoint it. All right, any questions?
Yes. Have we discussed
adequate suffixes on words like Elohim and Hashemayim that have plural endings? Good thing there.
Yes, really, a dual end like Hashemayim, a dual ending that would just take the same. For example, and if you want to say the heavens of the heavens, would be Shemay Shemayim. That would be the construct form. Construct form is the same as if it were Shamim instead of Shemayim. And the suffixes would be the same too. If you want to say my heavens, it just may never occur. I don't know if there's anything. God has got to say my heavens, you know.
Yeah.
And that would be Shemay.
You would say my God.
Okay, that would be for my God. That would be Elohai. And Eloheinu is the form for, that's very common, our God, the Lord our God, Eloheinu. And forget the Shema, you find that, you know, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad.
And what if you want to say my God?
Well, if you want to say my God, it would be the same, Eloheinu. Yeah.
Same just ambiguity. Like,
right, same ambiguity there as it would be for the singular. In other words, if you want to say God plural, it would be Elohim. If you want to say God, it would be Elohim. So context has to decide. It's usually your verb form and so forth that decides whether you're talking about God as the true God in a singular sense or a false God. And the same thing would be with the plural. So remember, for example, Adonai, that is actually that Pasach Yod is the first person suffix on a plural noun. So that would be considered also a plural of majesty. It'd be Adonim, you see, would be the plural. Adon is the singular, Adonim would be the plural. And then to put the plural suffix on, if you want to say my Lord, it'd be Adonai. So that would be the literal form.
Pasach Yod implies a plural.
Right.
A plural word.
Right, exactly. That's why Adonai is considered a plural of majesty.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is a little bit of a problem on that particular one because of the fact that Adoni would be my Lord singular,
mm-hmm.
and Adonai is my Lord plural, and the only difference is the Pasach versus hearing on that one letter. And of course that was added by the Masoretes in the Devout point, so there could be some debate about that one as to whether it's singular or plural, but you will find some forms where it's out of knee when you're talking about my Lord singular about a man or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where it's out of nine, normally out of nine, plural of man form.
Apparently you have plural suffixes on that.
Right. I mean, if it's a plural noun, it's a plural of majesty type of thing, you'll see plural suffixes on it, right? And Shemayim would be plural too because it just doesn't have a singular form, and so you're going to follow the formal characteristics of the plural nouns when you're dealing with those, even though you're still retaining a singular meaning. Yes, Peter?
I don't understand the way they're translating the narrative sequence. It seems like the same. Like A is the perfect tense plus the imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
He translated it all perfect. And then
mm-hmm.
B, he translated it all imperfect.
Right.
That's standard.
That's yes. That's the common way to translate it. That's probably a good working way to, you know, to do it as far as actually translating it. If you start with a perfect, then the perfect translation carries through, even though imperfect forms will now be the majority of the forms. Usually the perfect is just the very first one, and all the rest will be imperfect in the whole theory. But you're translating those imperfects as if they're perfect. And so you start out the man of role, then thought, so we're just translating the past all along the line. And then if you start out with an imperfect and then use perfects to continue, those perfects are being translated as if they were imperfects. That's what the idea of conversion is. Their translation value is being converted. And like I said, there's different schools of thought on this. Some books, basically like what he's presenting, just indicate that there's a conversion of the translation, that you just change the translation value. Others get a little bit more philosophical about it and suggest that maybe we're actually seeing a mechanism to transport you in a time frame to look at things happening, so forth. So I guess I'm inclined to favor that kind of a look at it, at least, to see some logic behind it, because this doesn't seem that... It seems like they're doing more than just converting. It seems like you could just continue perfect if you wanted to say perfect. It wouldn't be any harder. And there seems to be an attempt here to maybe bring more life to it. You feel a life to it that you wouldn't feel otherwise. And Hebrew is typically a very lively language. You know, it's got a lot of feeling, emotion, right? Very emotional, very poetic, very graphic in some ways. It's not precise, but it's still graphic. It's colorful. And the idioms are colorful. And... So I think that's the way I That's the way I like to think of it when I see that. I like to think of it. You start with a perfect to set your time value, and then you carry the person back with you, back into that time frame. And in that time frame, if you were back there, you would be describing things with imperfect. You'd be saying, he's doing this, and he's doing this, and he's doing this, if you were back there an eyewitness. And so in effect, what they're doing is saying, come along with me, I'll take you back into the story, and we'll watch it happen. Now, the other theory is a little bit harder to see in that respect, because you would think that if they do that in the other place, if you're talking about something in the future, they apparently are looking at something in the future, but using perfect. There may be an attempt to kind of bring that back to where you are now, because right now is the perfect compared to the future. You know what I mean? So it may be an attempt to try to pull future and past events into the present time frame.
You know how they regard going back?
I don't know if they really think about it that much, or whether even in modern... That's a good question we'll have to ask Elias. Mm-hmm. Ask him if they still use this sequence or pattern, like in a newspaper or something like that, if they're still using these converted forms. I would expect that they would. If they resurrected biblical Hebrew, that would be the pattern they'd be learning. But it'd be interesting to ask him how they think of it. Do they think of it this way, or do they just think of it as a converted, just a grammatical conversion and so forth, or... they probably may not even think of it either way. It's just the way they always talk. I don't know. Let's keep a note of that.
And when are we going to drag him in?
I haven't really talked to him yet, but we could any time. So I guess especially now that we've come this far, I think it'd be better to have him in. Let me jot a note down here. He's in one of my classes, but I kind of come in and go out. And I haven't really talked to him yet directly, but I have a different address. I'll try to remember that. Somebody remind me Tuesday.
Okay.
Get a hold of him real soon. Just don't want him to feel too intimidated, He's a fairly new student, and so I don't want him to think that we're putting him on the spot here. We're just curious. We just want to find out what he's got for us.
Only five questions a
piece. Be nice to don't hit him with deep theological questions. We just want to find out what the language is like. All right. The exercises here then, I didn't formally assign anything, but I think we can go ahead and get started with part A here, which is translation of Hebrew to English. And for next Tuesday, go ahead and do B, C, and D, and E, which is another part of translation of text. B is oral, so you don't need to really write anything out for it. We'll go through the class. So C, D, and E was the ones that you want to work on. Now, this is the end of lesson 24, which means, as you know, everything that ends in the divisible by 4 means another test. So we'll be having something coming up here pretty soon. We'll have to decide it next week. But I would say probably in the next week for the vocab, and probably the end of the week following for the grammar. So is Friday about the best day for tests? Yeah, good. Yeah, okay. So that's tentatively what we'll do. But maybe we might as well just write it down. None of this tentative stuff. This will be vocab lessons 21 to 24. And that will be Friday. What's the date next Friday?
17.
And then the following Friday will be the 24th. That would be the grammar on 21-24. Greek students can have one left for long too.
So what, 17 to 24?
21 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
We did 17 to 20 already.
Well, 21 to 24, yeah. Did you set the date?
Yes. I'm sorry. 217,
yeah.
That's the week from today,
right,
for the vocab.
Okay.
And 224,
yeah,
is the date for the...
Yeah, that was the 24th.
Now that's, yeah, kind of ironic. We have 17 and 24.
21 to 24.
Right. 21 to 24.
What were those dates? 21 and 24.
Yeah. Okay. Part A number one. We'll take a stab at that. You got 5 minutes. Just read it and see what we can do with it.
Just to show that I'm not trying to get out of it. I'll put in my question.
Okay.
Okay.
That's noble of you.
Where
is my... About page 110.
Marugu and Mahi
They slew our king and buried him on the outside of the city. Notice here we have a long consecutive series. We start out with a perfect Haragu, and then it becomes Wayikbaru in the imperfect for the second verb, and it's getting a perfect translation. So it doesn't mean they slew our king and will bury him outside of the city, but they slew our king and buried him outside of the city. Okay.
Any
other questions
about that?
Yes, go ahead.
My Lord, you said that that was a plural manuscript.
Right. Yeah. So
what I'm trying to figure out is when you put the ending on it, there's a comment on the end of it.
Right.
That word, but which, am I forgetting one of my suffix endings or?
Oh, no, it should be a pasuk killed on the end of it.
And he has a comment in the book.
He has comments in the book? Okay. The only thing I can figure that might happen there.
53
on
the top.
What page is it? Page 53 on the top.
There is an olive there, that might be it. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Yeah, normally we pop up yours. He said literally my lord, so it must be a irregular form or longer form of that suffix, or an older form of the suffix. You made a good point there. I don't know the, other than to say it's an alternate form or an older form of the suffix, the only thing I can say. Because it's definitely got that plural, because that's the first person singular idea. Okay.
Have
you
really guessed
it
where it was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really, there isn't anything much else you can do with it. But I don't know if it's just because of the way the form normally is found and the stress pattern and so forth and getting a prophetic idea that something's following or just what. I suspect my guess is it's probably an older form of the suffix. But we haven't really seen any great form of the suffix yet. My mind is blank here as far as we'll just have to kind of hold it here. Maybe I can find an answer for you. I'll sure let you know.
So what happens on that word? First of all, you put
out
of the end. That's where you get the reduction.
Right. That's where you get the reduction in the first of the syllable. And then you put the
other on this guy.
Right. So you would expect it pop up, you always get some of yours. So I think it's just an alternate form of it, but I'm not sure what, if there are any rules that govern when that one is used as opposed to another one. Usually these words for God and so forth are older words, and if there's been any changes in the language, those words don't get them. You know, for Yahweh, for example, it's got the wow in there instead of the yod that the form Hayah has, and they feel it, most of the scholars feel it's from the earlier form of the verb, when it was Hawa instead of Hayah. There's a lot of words like this. That's not the only word. There's a lot of words that you'll find in early Genesis and, you know, earlier Hebrew that have wows in them, and then later they have the old Hebrew wow. That happens, so.
Maybe the lexicon would tell you.
Yes, that might be, and without an eye, you might check the lexicon and just see if they, and the analytical, but they'll probably just say first person singular suffix and may not say anything about it.
If it is an alternate.
Yeah, they might just have to think of it, try to look it up and see if it's coming out. That's a good point. Okay.
Well, very valid question. This is the about point.
Yeah, it's just a vowel point difference here too. So time wise, I probably wouldn't think it'd be much different. But in that reason, the one side is all 1.7 anyway. So maybe that's a. It could be more of just a variant form, and it may have to do with stress or something. I don't have to do a good logical reason for that. Maybe we can get you over some other time. God bless you, brother.